Welcome to the Team EF Coaching Performance Podcast, where we take information from the highest level of sport and make it accessible for all cyclists. I'm your host, Zach Morris, and in this episode, I have a very special guest with me. I have Mr. Will Gerling, who is here with us in Girona at the Pro Team Camp, and Will is the nutritionist for pretty much the whole team. That's right, Will.
Yeah, for the whole team, that's right.
Welcome to the show.
It's good to be here. It's nice. The setup's pretty cool as well, eh?
Yeah, new setup, new upgrade. You guys are hopefully appreciating some new audio. And if you're watching the video version, we are doing a video podcast today, so you can find this on Spotify video or maybe YouTube. So welcome everybody from the video for the first time.
Nice to meet you.
So Will, how's your week been going so far? You've been pretty busy here at the camp.
Yeah, pretty busy. One-to-ones with all the riders, one-to-ones with all the Swaneers. And then a bunch of meetings with staff that, like Jono, the GM, and yep, the chef, and other people.
New people to the team, old guys returning with old issues. Must be a lot going on.
Yeah, exactly. But sent out for the best success for season 2023.
Yeah, it's an exciting year. The yep, new roster is exciting. Everybody's vision's exciting. Lots yep, of new stuff
I'm
happening. So it's great. So, Will, you've been in the nutrition game for a while. Tell us a little bit about you and how you worked your way to becoming the big dog in the nutrition game on the EF Pro Cycling team.
Sure. I actually, my whole journey started from being a personal trainer, actually, from being 18. As I did that, working with people, I realized that nutrition was the thing that people still struggled with. You know, people could get to the gym more often than not. And my own relationship with nutrition has been an interesting one, from a large child to also a bit of disordered eating myself, and started to do some courses in nutrition, did a couple of really shit ones, and then did a postgrad diploma in nutrition. Then I did my master's degree in nutrition, started working at Pro Conti team.
So how long were those, over what period of time were those studies?
So from 2016, I started my postgrad, mm-hmm, and then I did one each year prior to that, which weren't the very good ones. So, I guess 8 years.
Wow. That is a lot of time honing in on understanding nutrition and just trying to have the best understanding of that one particular area as you can. So 8 years is a long time.
Yeah. It's been a while. And it's always interesting. What I love about science so much is that there is always more research coming out. There is always evolvement in the area, and you can read these studies, pick up new knowledge, pick up new understanding, and apply it straight away. You know, we could read studies today about certain things and apply it to the riders, for this next season.
Especially in a sport like cycling, where it's so physically demanding. You really notice the differences. You know, there are some things that come out that might not directly apply to somebody working out a couple hours, you know, a week. But with these guys, the smallest change in their protocol makes a huge difference.
For sure. I think there's inevitably, I think we know that the temperatures are rising. Some of the hottest racing we had last year. And we're doing big pushes now on how can we keep them cool?
Yeah.
How can we improve performance in the heat? And that's a big drive and a big point for us this next season.
I was fascinated, and I didn't hear anybody else really talking about this, but you bring up the body temperature thing. And I was fascinated at how much effort Jumbo Visma put into keeping Vingegaard cold. Like you would literally have Wout van Aert coming back from a breakaway, grabbing ice bag or a cold bottle and directly handing it to Vingegaard as the train came through. Like the entire team was hyper-focused on keeping him cool.
Yeah, exactly. We had some similar things as Jumbo, but just not as widespread, I guess, because their Swaneer fleet of cars is a bit more extensive than I think anyone else out in the peloton. But they have mini freezers in all their cars, and they then have, you know, ice socks and whatever else in there to give out to all riders at loads of different points along the race, and ourselves included, using like Never Second products. Have ice gels, which is a bit like a slush puppy or a nice slurry, and the guys have that, and then that keeps their core temperature down as well.
So for my Canadian followers, he was just talking about a freezy.
Freezy.
We call those freezies.
Love it.
So you went in, you became a trainer. You spent 8 years studying nutrition.
Yeah.
And you worked in some other sports, right?
Yeah, I've worked with professional boxers. I worked actually with Derek Chisora, who was fighting Tyson Fury for the world.
Really?
Yeah, I worked with him for a few fights.
That is amazing.
So
what are those guys? What was those guys' nutrition like? Similar to cycling or?
No, very different.
Yeah, okay.
Yeah. I will say the attitude's very different.
Okay.
You know, those guys' philosophy around food, philosophy around training is different because they'll also focus it just for a camp.
Right.
You know, they'll have 1-2 fights a year.
Right.
Do a 12-week camp. It's during those 12 weeks that's like, okay, yeah, I'm going to be good now. I'm going to do something. But the rest of the time, you know, they just do what they want, booze, drink. Not all of them, maybe. You know, there are some probably more professional boxers out there, but a lot of the ones I've worked with, they're like that.
When you're a pro cyclist, you've got like 4 weeks a year to slip up tops. And if you slip up too hard, your whole season's maybe in jeopardy. So.
Exactly. You get like October or November, maybe. That's it.
Maybe. You know? Some guys were still racing in October this year.
Yeah, loads of those special edition races. Where they're all doing that, and that was like late into October, even November, right?
Well, with the new point structure, right, if the season's just become so long and so important the entire season, because now we need points to stay in the world tour, right?
This last year of the 3 years has just been crazy, especially with obviously the previous years of COVID. Points were even more sought after, and I think it did make for interesting racing in some respects.
I agree.
But, you know, with the kind of way that funding is in cycling, it also needs a little bit of a look at in terms of how many points you get for a win. Because some of these one-day races, you get like 400-something points for. You win a stage of the Tour de France, hardest race in the world, you get like 100-something.
Yeah.
So.
Yeah. And it's just as hard to win a tour stage as it is almost anything, right?
Exactly right.
Best bike racers in the world going out.
Yeah, so. For sure.
So you're working with boxers and what other type of athletes?
Yeah, so I've worked with guys in Ironman, a lot of Ironman,
cool.
Professionals and amateurs, all the way to like Kona, both 70.3 and full distance.
So was that kind of like your introduction to really focusing on endurance sports were the triathletes?
Yeah, it was. My personal love and why I got into nutrition specifically in cycling was through bikepacking. I'd done some really big bikepacking trips.
Really?
Yeah, 200-mile days.
Like taking your tent in the bag.
Yeah. Just free camping. Yeah.
Really?
Yeah, I did. I did the width of Spain. I got a ferry to Spain from England. Rode the width of Spain. Did the bull run in Pamplona, then like rode the length of France, and like that was my introduction to cycling. I bought like an 800-pound bike. I just like, I didn't know nothing about cycling.
Okay.
And that was my introduction. I was like, this is the best.
Okay. So here's a question. How do you go from like entry level bike packer on an 800 quid bike to becoming the head nutritionist on one of the biggest teams in pro cycling?
Yeah. I mean, a lot of that's like, I guess, grind and hunger, right? To achieve and be at that level. I think I did, as I did my master's degree, I was like emailing nonstop to teams and people and just reaching out to them and just trying to get jobs, essentially. And eventually someone took me up. I worked with them for 2 years, and then I worked freelance at the World Tour with some CCC guys for a couple of years. And then I got this job.
Right.
And I remember I reached out to one of the guys on the team. Didn't get a response, and exactly a year to the day, I emailed him again, and like a year later, and I didn't get a response again. But then 3 months later, I got a random call, and they were like, "Oh, do you want an interview?"
Wow!
And I was like, "Yes, I do."
It's funny how things work in cycling. You know, it's so much is timing.
Yeah.
Right. And you know now, right? Like when things are happening on the team, it's like there's no free hands or minds. It's like everything's happening, and then when you need somebody, you're like, oh. Go through the emails. You're like, okay, yeah, get in touch with this person now.
It is right place, right time for some of it. And I think for most teams, they only have one nutritionist.
Yeah,
you know, for the most part. So you know, you think about how many teams there are. There's only going to be like 18 people, something doing this job. Yeah, I think Jumbo and Ineos have a couple of people.
Right.
But
so with all the new guys coming to the team, a couple of them coming from some of the even bigger teams like Ineos, right?
Yeah.
And some guys returning. How have these initial consultations been for you with the guys this year?
Yeah, it's been interesting. I had a few good conversations, and it's interesting to hear their experiences.
Okay.
how different teams and cultures work. You know, the culture of this team is such a great culture, and I think that's why we have such a great fan base as well. Mm-hmm. And it's seen really, you know, from everyone outside of the team that what kind of feeling it has. And there are other teams with, I think, that are a lot more analytical. There are a lot more about just winning. Right. And that comes across in some of these conversations. You know, you hear from them about how it is, the mentality, and, you know, maybe they're not enjoying that as much, or the impact it has, I guess, on day-to-day living.
So how does that trickle down to what's on the plate?
Yeah, so some teams have done plate service. You know, this is what you have. This is what you get given. Other ones have a lot more complicated and overcomplicating all the nutrition, what the decisions made in a race. You know, I've seen a couple of plans from other teams, nutritionists to the riders, and it's so complicated. Like, have 70 grams of carbs in this in this period of time, and then 80 here, and 100 here, and then 400 mils of water here, but 600 mils of water there.
Right.
You're in a race. You're in a peloton. Mm-hmm. Like, you're not checking your bid on that. Yeah. You've had 400 mils of water. Like, yeah, you're not doing that.
It's hard enough to remember to get a bottle, a couple gels in an hour, right? Exactly. Like, especially a race like the Tour de France, where it's focused from start to finish, full on racing.
Exactly. You know, and you've raced yourself. Like, it's not easy to like be doing mental math in your head. Like, you know, you think about the products that a team has as a sponsor. Some products aren't all in uniform numbers. We're lucky that we have that.
That is what's great about Never Second. 30, 60, 90 makes it a lot easier to keep track of the carbs you're putting down.
And we do that with, you know, the rice cakes. We turn the rice cakes to be 30 grams as well. So whatever they pick up, they know it's a multiple of 30.
Yeah. And not even not just at the pro level, like even for a lot of our older customer base, that simplicity means so much to them. Yeah. And it's really cool that you guys even, you know, carry that through to things like rice cakes and other snacks. So it's simple. If you're eating, you know, you got 30 grams of carbs. How many times did I eat last hour?
Exactly.
All right, I'm on the limit, 170 heart rate. Like,
yeah.
All right, I think I ate three times. Good. I'm good.
Exactly. Right. Yeah. I mean, obviously not naming products, but there are products where, you know, the gels are like 22 grams or 25 grams, and then the drink's 40 grams. And then this bar is like 36 grams. You're like, well, how am I going to, like, you know, remember what I've had? It's just not possible.
Yeah. You could do it when you get off the bike after the race and be like, what? I think. But yeah, without the even numbers, it's pretty much impossible.
Exactly right.
Cool. So I'd say, you know, to your point there, everybody, all the new guys that have come into the team have been really happy to be here.
Yeah.
Like, the energy around this team is so unique.
Yeah.
And it's not something really that exists in other teams. The whole hierarchy thing that exists in other teams. And,
no, exactly.
You know, EF Pro Cycling is really obviously a lot about results, but also a lot about being, you know, good people. And, you know, we've been the underdog for so long that you kind of build that character.
Yeah, right? I think, right?
As a team. And it's like, you win together, you lose together.
Yeah. I think you even notice it at Grand Tours and at places where you share with other other teams. Mm-hmm. And you're like, there's always laughter and like jokes and things happening around our team. And then like other teams, it's a bit more somber sometimes.
Right. Well, last year wasn't our best year, but we did win some big races.
Yeah, we won some good stages. We still, you know, won a stage at the Tour de France still, which is great.
Yeah, that was amazing.
And some decent results.
So you've been the nutritionist now for 2 years here.
2 years, yeah.
Right. What would you say some of the biggest obstacles are that you face when you first start working with somebody on their nutrition?
I think nutrition has such, people have such an intimate relationship with their nutrition. It can be comfort, it can be cultural, it can be, and it's one of those things where people can access information about it really easily. It's everywhere. And they all have their own experiences with it. Whereas sometimes, and I could be wrong here if I spoke to maybe one of the coaches or something, but like with training, I think you have your coach, he tells you what to do, you go out there, you do your session. Whereas like nutrition's all the time, it's your breakfast, it's your lunch, it's every day. And I think that relationship with food can be really hard for some people to change, to alter, to also understand as another individual coming from a different culture. And especially with a team with so many cultures, it can, some people can get a bit defensive initially or aren't that open to maybe making change with their nutrition.
Well, I guess with the intervals, it's like you're not going to like all your intervals, but you're going to go out there and do them anyways.
Yeah.
Whereas with food, if you really don't like a food and, exactly. and it's the one you should be eating, that's a little tougher.
Yeah. Yeah, exactly. And I think, and something that we're probably going to come on to in a bit is, you know, talking about tracking your food. Not everyone wants to do that. And there are definitely guys in the team that don't want to do it. And that could be from a relationship point of view with food, of whether it's, you know, not wanting to obsess about it and worrying about obsessing about it. But how can you, sometimes you need to do it for at least a period of time to get a true context and true idea of how much to have in relation to the training you're doing.
Well, how else would you know? Actually, this was one of the, I mean, we'll just jump into the tracking
sure.
now.
Yeah,
So how important is tracking, Will? If for somebody that's never done nutrition tracking before, they're just eating what they think they should be eating, the right amounts, they're not weighing any food, yeah. they've really got no experience in tracking their food. How important is that, and how much of a difference does that make?
Yeah, I think it's a huge importance. I think, you know, from a private consultancy level, the amount, I'd say 99% of the people that come to me want to be empowered. They want to know and have knowledge about how they can manage their nutrition to support their lives, their training. And you think about all these other diets, whether it's keto, veganism, carnivore diet now as well, all these other things, these fad diets, and companies like Slim Fast, etc.
They're all teams. Team carnivore.
Yeah, yeah, exactly. But like they don't actually teach you anything about the food you're having. They're just saying, eat this, don't eat that.
Mm-hmm.
Or use our point system or whatever. You're not actually learning about anything to do with that food. You should know, if I follow this system, I get this result.
Right.
Or that if I eat this and don't eat that, I'm going to be healthier. And it's just not the case. And I think it's important that if people do track their food and do, whether it's 2 weeks, whether it's 4 weeks, you know, even that period of time, they would learn so much about their food. They would get a context about how many calories are in the foods that I like and I eat regularly, how much protein is in it, how much carbohydrate is it in it, and fat. And that will give them, even then, a base level of knowledge of, these are the foods I have, this is how many calories and et cetera is in it. And then if you do a bit of research or end up hiring a nutritionist, you have going to have a better idea about what you're working towards.
Well, so in our program, we have a few different levels, but at the premium level, we get everybody to start tracking their nutrition in an app called Chronometer. You yeah. were the one to actually recommend that. So what we've realized is that so many endurance athletes are under-fueling.
Yeah.
And it's not until we look at 2 weeks of their, you know, nutrition tracking that we can really pinpoint that and say, like, look, this isn't an idea that we have. This isn't something we, you know, we think we're on a hunch about. You are under-fueling, and that's why you're constantly running out of energy at the end of your workouts. You're dealing with way too much muscle soreness, and you're just yeah. not recovering from your sessions. So these are the types of things that we learn from a lot of amateur-level athletes, and actually even some pretty high-level athletes who just constantly under-fuel for their workouts.
Yeah, yeah. It's easy. You know, at the higher level, it kind of happens sometimes for a different reason that if it's zone one, zone two ride, it's just easy. Like, it's not hard for them. And they can go out and they can do, you know, 3, 4, 5 hours on minimal fuel. But it doesn't mean that they're not burning calories during that time. And if you still go out and burn like 5,000 calories, which you could easily do on like a 4-hour, 5-hour ride, for these guys anyway, that if you haven't fueled that ride properly, then you're going to come off the back of that and be like, well, I've got to eat a lot now to kind of level that out. And then that carries over to the next day. And that's the same with normal everyday people. As we did, you know, we did a cool seminar the other day with the guys here at the camp.
Yeah, that was amazing.
And, you know, even then a couple of the guys mentioned, and I could see some like nods of, oh yeah, that's me. You know, they go out on the weekend, they've got the time, they hit a big ride, don't fuel it properly, don't eat enough. Next day, you know, they're absolutely ravenous, super hungry, recovery is impaired. And if they had to ride that day, it's probably not going to be as good. Or if they don't have to ride, they're probably going to overeat. And then that's going to cause a real you know, up and down in their weight, because you know it's very typical to see this kind of.
So what? Yeah, that's my question. Is you're going to answer it? What happens if you go out, you undereat on a hard training session, and then you don't eat properly that day? The following day, you overeat. What happens?
Yeah. So if you did weigh yourself every day, and you know, I see this with people I work with privately and some riders. But like you weigh yourself every day and you get in this kind of catch 22, undereat, weight goes down massively the next day because you've haven't replenished enough and it's dropped loads, but appetite massively goes up. So you overeat that day. Following day after that, weight's massively up and you're like, well, damn, I'm up. I need to bring that weight back down. So then you undereat again. And you end up in this cycle of like your weight going up and down, up and down, up and down. Mm-hmm. And it's just spiking and dropping all over the place because you're not always fueling appropriately for the day, mm-hmm. or fueling for the work required, as I like to say. And you're kind of chasing your tail in, I need my weight to be going down. For most people want to like obviously lose weight or at least at the very minimum maintain it. It's a struggle then because they're just trying to like chase that number, I guess.
So is it just the food that causes the weight change, or is there some water retention? How does that work?
I mean, there's quite a few different factors. It can be water retention, sodium-based water retention, inflammation from the training, glycogen storage, even just high fiber intakes. If you do have a really big day, you know, you do, you know, 4+ hours, the amount of food, if you do it appropriately, the amount of food you have is still going to be considerably more, which means it's more food in your digestive tract, which then means you probably could sit heavier the next day anyway, compared to if you just
sit. So even though you've gone 5 hours on your bike and you fueled properly,
yeah,
the following day there's a good chance that you're going to be heavier just from the amount of food that you ate?
Not always like a good chance, but like I think there's a fair chance. Like, because okay, depending also where you are in your block and so on, it could have inflammation. If your sleep wasn't that great as well, because you're in a big block, a big week of training, like the guys here, that we're doing, you know, the camp with you, that by the end of the week, you know, there's going to be some built up fatigue, and you could easily see a couple of people if everything it hasn't been, you know, their nutrition hasn't been perfect, sleep gets affected a little bit, next thing you know, weighing a bit more.
Well, what's interesting is we kicked off that camp with me telling everybody, look, if you don't take your nutrition seriously from day one, you're going to have a bad camp. You're not going to enjoy yourself here.
Yeah.
And this is why I'm being so hard on you guys. So I had their bottles full of carbs and I was giving them a protocol every single day. But we noticed like a couple people did skip dinner here and there because they wanted to go to bed earlier. And those are the people by the end of the week that were absolutely fading.
Yeah, I can imagine.
So why does that happen, Will? Why does, if I skip one dinner over the course of a week, why is there no coming back from that?
Yeah, I mean, if you're having inadequate calories, it's going to be from also protein, which is going to decrease your ability to recover in the muscle and reducing the amount of muscle protein synthesis you have. So you're going to see increase in DOMS probably as well with that. It's a delayed onset muscular soreness, so that fatigue they have the next day. So it's going to be more inflammation, less muscle recovery, and also they're probably going to have less carbohydrate, so lower glycogen stores. Going to start the ride the next day in a more depleted state. Chances are they're going to struggle to maintain energy and exercise output in that session.
Sounds like a really out of whack body, underfueled, super inflamed, carrying more water. You might even be heavier.
Yeah,
like that doesn't sound good at all.
No, I mean definitely it can happen. Yeah, and it's not going to be leading to the best week of riding. That's for sure.
So let's talk about how we can optimize this. So we kind of went over all the stuff that can go wrong.
Yeah.
So let's look at a couple of different scenarios in terms of workout types and then build some strategy around what would be the optimal fueling for those types of workouts. So let's look at a 5-hour ride. I get a 5-hour ride. How should my maybe days leading into it look the morning of while I'm riding and optimal recovery for something like that? What does that look like to you?
So as long as let's just say it's going to be going into it normally, because unless they're doing a really late intense turbo session or something the night before, we don't really need to consider anything.
And I said endurance, right? 5-hour endurance, right?
You did say endurance. Okay. Yeah. So if they're doing 5 hours endurance, it's still a big day out. They're going to burn a lot of calories. So that first meal of the day is going to be really important, both from a case of restoring depleted liver glycogen stores, which will be lower because of just slept. You need to maintain your blood glucose whilst you're sleeping. So that'll be lower. Wake up, you want to replenish that. But you also want more calories just because 5 hours and it's going to be a big calorie expenditure. You just need to get on top of it from the start of the day.
So even though we're riding easy, I still need more calories for my breakfast.
100%. Yeah. And you're looking for obviously a large carbohydrate-based meal with some protein and a little bit of fat. And what that could look like, you know, you could probably look in anywhere between 20 and 40 grams of protein in that meal, which you could get from eggs, yogurt, or some people like just have whey protein because it's very easy. You can mix it into your oats or some yogurt or something like this. And that's it's quite a nice way to have it. Carbohydrate-wise, for something like that, you're looking at like kind of 1.5 grams per kilogram body weight to like 2.5 grams your body weight.
And why would that change based on what?
I think it would change slightly based upon how soon afterwards you're leaving from having that meal. Some people just can't stomach a lot of food. Mm-hmm. And that could be a struggle. It could also be based upon overall goal. Are they trying to drop body fat? Are they trying just to maintain? I mean, if you're at a training camp, typically, I would say don't even try and lose weight at a training camp.
Yeah.
It's going to be such a hard week of training. Just focus on recovering and eating well. You can lose weight in so many other areas of the year.
Right.
If you're professional, it's a bit different.
Right. So big breakfast, bigger than you would maybe normally take on.
Yeah.
Mostly carbs and protein, low fat. Interesting. So how long before you head out the door on your ride should you eat that breakfast?
Ideally, you're looking at like kind of 2 to 4 hours.
Up to 4 hours, really?
Yeah, yeah. If you have the time, for sure. But yeah, 2 hours, 2-3 hours is a nice sweet spot.
And why do we do that? Why do we take so much time between the meal and the ride?
It's just going to allow it to digest, actually get into the system, start to replenish those stores. In the seminar we did the other day, we also kind of spoke about rebound hyperglycemia. An event that can occur for certain people, not everyone, where you get lethargy at the beginning of a ride. It starts to then change the choices that you make. If you have time, you have 2 hours, having like a good mixture of, you know, low to high glycemic index foods to end up being a moderate amount, which could be just oats with banana and honey. That's a good mixture of different types of glycemic index. That's going to have time to digest and, you know, you're going to feel good off of it. But if you then start looking at getting up and going straight out, sometimes you got to do that. Maybe you got family commitments later on in the day. Then, you know, you probably want to take just high glycemic index foods, things that are going to rapidly go into the body that can already start helping you to do that exercise. And that's going to be something like just having bread and jam an easy digesting cereal. Rice Krispies is a good one because it's just rice, really. It's low in fiber. And if you head out on the bike about 15, 20 minutes after that, that's going to be raising blood sugar levels and you're already starting activity as those blood sugar levels are rising.
So you prefer the low fiber carbs for breakfast?
Definitely. If you're going to be heading out pretty soon afterwards, I would go low fiber. I would go easy digesting. I wouldn't do anything complicated. I wouldn't do high fat, anything like that.
So you're fueled up. You're ready to head out the door for your five hour ride, right? What should I have in my pockets? What should I be thinking? What should my fueling strategy be? What should I be thinking about here?
You want to be a scout. You want to be prepared.
Okay.
Right. You know, I recommend people to lay everything out on their table before they even head out.
Bike packer.
Yeah. But, you know, you want to.
I'm like rummaging through the cupboards. Like, where are those gels? Where's the carb mix?
No, exactly.
Oh, gosh.
No, you want it all laid out on the counter. You know, okay, I've got this every hour. And, you know, chances are you can't take extra bidons with you and so on. That's fine. We can do some like DIY carb drinks on the way.
What are those?
So you could just do like a Fanta or a Coke or something.
Gatorade.
You could do a Gatorade. I like to, if you've got like a 500, 600 mil bidon and you put a can of Coke or a can of Fanta in, it's exactly 35 grams of carbs. Fill the rest up with water. It's immediately a hypertonic drink. So
Is it still delicious with the water?
Coke's not so much, yeah. But Fanta's all right.
Yeah?
Yeah. You have Fanta in the States, yeah?
I think we have Fanta. It's not as big as it used to be, but okay. I think it's still around.
Well, yeah, you could do that. I don't know, some like orange-flavored beverage, right? You know? Those cans are typically around 35 grams of carbs.
Life hack.
Yeah. And then if you can, if you pop into like a cafe or something, grab like a 1 gram sachet of salt. That's 400 milligrams of sodium, which is the same as you get in any electrolyte tab for the majority of commercial products.
Another life hack.
Yeah. So there you go.
So the can of Fanta and the packet of salt.
Exactly. And now you've got yourself a 30 gram carb drink with some sodium in it. So you can make that anywhere.
Wow.
Gas station. Like,
my life is forever changed. So I've got everything laid out. I'm out there. I'm into it. What's my fueling strategy for a 5-hour endurance? Yeah. How much should I be eating while I'm riding?
At minimum, you should be 60 grams an hour.
At minimum?
At minimum, yeah.
And does that change based on how big or small the person is?
No. So there's a whole great amount of research that shows that weight has no difference in oxidation rates.
Okay.
If anything, it actually benefits smaller guys more because they're not going to be burning as many calories, but they can take on as much carbohydrate as a big guy, you know? So
that's fascinating.
Yeah.
So what about all this stuff where it's like, I think a lot of even teams do this where they're like, oh, you weigh this much, so you need to eat this much per hour while you're riding, you're less, so you don't need
to eat as much. If they're doing that, they might be looking at it purely from a calorie balance point of view. Maybe that's maybe what I would possibly look at that for. And that's because obviously a smaller person is not going to burn as many calories from a resting metabolic rate. And also from how many calories they burn an hour compared to a big guy. So, you know, maybe it's from that perspective.
And would that matter more on like a race day versus an endurance day?
Which bit, sorry?
The making sure you're topped up on the carbs.
Yeah, I think so. Like for a race day here at our team, I recommend 90 grams an hour, whatever day it is.
Okay. Well, we'll get into that after this. So yeah. 60 grams an hour. I'm popping into the cafe, getting my packets of salt and got my Fanta going. What, aside from the bottles, what type of foods should I be eating? Should I be eating gels? Should I be eating bars? Should I be eating packs of Haribos?
Sure. Like, it's a great one. Ultimately, it comes down to preference with some rules.
Okay.
So the rules I would say is whatever food choices you go for, want it low in fiber because fiber is going to slow down digestion, probably going to give you some GI distress.
Oh,
same thing for fat. Fat slows down digestion, probably going to give you some GI distress as you go on. And other than that, though, if you're sticking to having simple carbohydrates, whether it's Haribo, whether it's over here in the UK, we have something called Saurine. I don't know if you have it in the States.
I haven't seen that one.
You know, something like this, though, that's like quite easy digesting, low in fiber, whether it's gels and your bars you can buy, then that would be most ideal.
So like the chicken empanadas with hot sauce that I usually go for, not good?
No, possibly not, no.
Okay. I get those at the end of like for the 30-minute cruise home.
Okay, yeah, fine. Yeah, that'd be fine.
Cool. So that's pretty straightforward. 60 grams an hour.
Yeah.
While you're out there, you get home. Now what? What should I use to recover?
If you're doing 5 hours, you know, we mentioned protein a bit previously, but you'd want some protein before you head out. Starts that kind of total protein balance for the day, which is important for recovery. And then after 5 hours, you'll definitely want some more protein again. This could come in a few different ways. It could come from your recovery shake or a protein. It could come from you having a meal that you've already made, maybe some leftovers from the day before if you want to have like a proper meal. It could come, there's a whole great amount of research in milk in specific and its effect on recovery being probably the most natural recovery drink you can have. It naturally comes with some sugar, carbohydrate, and comes with some fast and slow digesting protein.
But there's a lot of people out there that maybe are like not dairy drinkers.
Yeah.
And I think a lot of them believe that it might like affect their respiratory system. What are your thoughts on that?
For dairy?
Yeah.
I haven't read any research on respiratory system based effects from dairy. I know there's a whole bunch of research obviously on cancer and things like this, but the majority of research shows that it's not going to be of detriment. There's actually more research out there that shows that milk is beneficial to us than not beneficial.
Interesting. So I've got my kind of heavy recovery meal, my protein shake or my glass of milk or my leftovers. What kind of ratio of carbs to fats to protein should I be looking for in that meal?
Straight after the ride?
Yeah.
Yeah, so I'd be aiming for around 0.5 grams per kilogram body weight of protein, 1.2 grams per kilogram body weight of carbohydrate, and then fat I'd probably just keep under maybe under 10 grams. That's just, once again, not slow down digestion too much. Make sure you're getting those carbohydrates rapidly into the body to help recovery.
And how soon after the ride should I eat that?
It's not going to be a case that if you don't get it in straight away, like your legs are going to start melting away or anything.
Right.
But if you have activity the next day, that's really important. The sooner you get it in will aid that recovery process a bit more. But if you came in and you had a shower or something, it's not going to be the end of the world.
Right. Cool. So after my recovery meal, how do I set myself up for success the next day?
Yeah. So it's interesting, actually, we were talking about a five-hour day because I did it exactly. I planned a whole day out for one of the EF riders yesterday.
Cool.
And, you know, he had his breakfast. It was oats, banana, some juice, honey, and some bread and jam. I fed him 90 grams an hour for his ride with through gels, drink, and a couple of the DIY things as well, because he's going to go. He's not going to have the team with him, so he'll make a couple of those. And then he finished. I gave him a liter of chocolate milk, 1% chocolate milk.
A liter.
A liter, yeah.
Delicious.
It gave him exactly those macros that he needed. It came out at 35 grams of protein, 100 grams of carbohydrate, 10 grams of fat. So hits bang on.
Perfect.
And then after that, he had some cereal because he's going to ride again really hard the next day. Make sure he had enough calories. So cereal's just really light, really easy, especially after all the food he's had already. He's not going to feel massively hungry.
Right.
And then he had a really nice kind of Mexican style tortilla, chicken thigh fajitas, I guess.
And like how many fajitas?
It was only two fajitas, big ones though. And it had rice, beans, obviously some coriander, a little bit of guacamole, and yeah, some pan fried chicken thighs.
No dessert?
No dessert. He had like a pre-bed snack of some yogurt with some berries and peanut butter.
Okay.
Yeah. So it's not too bad.
So you think most people riding 5 hours on an endurance pace should be looking at something like that?
Yeah. Yeah. I think so. I mean, typically average expenditure on a bike, you know, I'm going with averages here, but right. Like it's about 700 calories an hour.
Mm-hmm.
So,
I mean, for a good rider.
Yeah. You know, 650 maybe if you're going at a slower pace, 600. If you're going even slower than that, obviously it's going to be less, but like if we went with the average of 700, it's going to be what 3400 calories ish. I think that's terrible math.
I'm just five. Done. Yeah, it would be like 28 plus 35.
Yeah, and then and then add your RMR to that, so your resting metabolic rate,
yeah,
which for the majority of people is going to be like around, let's say, 1600-1700. So now it's coming up to like 5,000 calories for that day.
Right.
That can be really hard to get in if you don't consciously think about it. And then maybe that's not all you're doing that day. You know, maybe you got to go walk to the shops. Yeah. So there's a bit of non-exercise activity, thermogenesis.
Maybe work a job.
Work a job, exactly. Kids, got to play with your kids, something like this. You know, suddenly, okay, there's like 350 calories of non-exercise activity. Thermic effect of food is 10% of total caloric intake. So now you've got like another 1,000 calories near enough. It's like 850 calories there, yep, just from other things. So it's like now it's nearly 6,000 calories.
Yeah. Yeah. So, I mean, we really drilled that home this week with our group of guys that were here in Toronto with us. And they left like realizing like, yeah, like, okay, I really need to think about staying on top of my food.
For sure.
Because if you don't, then you can't play bikes with all your friends when you want to go fast up the hill.
Yeah, exactly. Right.
So, yeah, but that thermogenic effect of food there that you mentioned, that's also another big one that I think most people don't take any consideration to at all.
No, exactly.
So how important is it to track that?
I think it's an interesting one. Sometimes I include it, sometimes I don't.
Okay.
And the reason why I don't is because sometimes people don't always fully report everything they have. So when we look at dietary recalls, so that's where you finish your day and then you try and think back to what you've had over the day. Some great research papers showing it's about 30% inaccurate,
mm-hmm,
which obviously, you know, every 1,000 calories, it's 300 calories.
Forgot about that chocolate bar I wolfed back
exactly
the airport.
Right. So, you know, 10% kind of maybe mitigates some of those little things that people have.
Right.
But That's why, you know, it kind of comes back to that point that we're trying to make about tracking your food and why it's so important is like, if you do that, you're going to get a better idea about how much to have, what you're having, and actually be more clued into it.
I think if you've never done it, it's almost like an essential part of understanding nutrition.
Yeah.
I don't think there's any other way to really do it. I think if you were to track for a good period of time, it's not something maybe you'd want to do forever. You might want to start periodically again if you're getting ready for a big race or doing something like that. But if you've never done it, you've never weighed your meals, you've never really looked at, you know, what it is you're eating on a daily, weekly, monthly basis. Like what we do with our premium clients is every week we send them a report of their nutrition. It's like, look, this is what you did on average over the course of the last week. And those reports tell you a lot.
Yeah, yeah, for sure.
And when you have that accountability or somebody saying, hey, this is what you did, you need to change this, like eventually you work your way into, you know, a good nutrition protocol that works for you. But not only that, you actually understand because you've, you know, taken the put the effort into tracking those meals and actually now you have a lot of data to go back and look at. So without the tracking, I mean, it's, I don't think it really works.
No, no, for sure. I mean, it's hard to say. If we looked at it purely from a calorie perspective as well, somebody's trying to drop body fat, lower their weight, ultimately, that if they track their food every day and they did their exercise, et cetera, and track that as well, let's say it's cycling for this case, you know, you've got your power meter, heart rate monitor, you know how many calories you burn in every session. You weigh yourself every day to get an average, okay? At the end of the week, let's say your weight is exactly the same. If you tracked everything perfectly, and you did, you know, how much activity you did every day, step count and exercise amount, and your weight is the same, that means you're in a maintenance. You're not in a calorie deficit. So then you can easily make the decision to go, oh, well, I should lower my calories because I'm obviously not in a deficit. And then they've already learned from 1 week of full tracking, doing their exercise and tracking their step count, which is non-exercise activity, that if I eat this much with this much activity, it's maintenance. And then they can already make that decision to go, oh, I want to lose weight. I'll drop it 300 calories every day.
Mm-hmm.
And the difficulty obviously comes is that not every week's the same.
Right.
But,
and so, I'm sorry, did you have something?
No, I was just going to say, but you still learned something there. Like you know how many calories to have.
Yeah. And that's the important part is just kind of learning and understanding and working your way to like, just improving all these different areas of your life. But that's why people hire coaches like you and like us.
Yep.
So, Will, that was great. I think the endurance day is pretty well covered. How much does it change for a day where, let's say, you're going out and hitting threshold efforts?
Yeah. How many hours are we going to just like?
I think it's kind of broken up into two categories, and one of them might be unique because let's say, for example, you're going and you're doing a sportif race that starts at like 6 o'clock in the morning. Like, how do you even approach something like that?
Yeah. So we'd start with a carb load the day before.
Right.
Or, you know, we hope. Would, yeah.
Yep.
And
it's not good to try to lose weight the week before the race, folks.
No. No, definitely not.
Definitely a bad strategy.
1 day carb load is more than enough for a sportive like that. You don't need to do 3 days, don't need to do a depletion session, you know, some of these old school thinkings. So just 1 day before, aim for around 10 grams per kilogram body weight of carbohydrate. So you get a really enjoyable day.
Nice.
And you want to start the day big. I think the biggest mistake I see with carb loads is people eat normal all day. They get to dinner, especially if they're at a sportive, they're at a different hotel, they go to a restaurant, they have a pizza, you have food you never have before. And then they wonder why they wake up in the morning feeling super bloated.
Right.
You know, so, you know, start with a great breakfast, great lunch, snacks through the day, and, you know, just dinner being normal size and pick something that you regularly have.
10 grams per kilo. So how many grams would you have to have?
I mean, I'd have to have like 1,000.
Gosh,
yeah, but
it's a day out, man.
It's a good day. It's a lot of Haribo. Yeah.
So I'm all carved up, I'm nervous, not sleeping.
Yeah,
all right, got a big day starting at 6 a.m on the start line, which means I'm up at like what, 4?
Yeah, so if they've carb loaded properly, muscle glycogen is fully stocked, don't need to have a super big breakfast. Right there we're going to really focus on just getting the liver glycogen replenished and maybe like a little bit extra as a top up.
Okay. So right. So what does that breakfast look like?
So I think you could do it with just toast and bread and jam and honey.
Okay.
Something like this. That'd be ideal. It's going to be low fiber. It's going to be super easy to digest. A typical large slice of, you know, your loaf bread is going to be around 30 grams of carbohydrate. So you have four of those. It's 120 grams. Have a bit of jam or honey on each one of those, and you're good to go.
Okay. No protein, no eggs.
You don't necessarily need to for a sport eve because it's a one-day event. And yeah, it could impact your recovery a bit afterwards. But if you're nervous, if you don't want to have too much, it's not going to be the end of the world.
Okay.
You know, in that instance, having a whey protein shake could help you if you've taken it with you because it's simple, it's easy to digest.
Interesting. Yeah. So now let's say, I mean, how long is the average sport eve? 3 hours? I don't know.
I think it's about six.
6 hours?
Yeah, 6 hours.
Okay. You guys are doing the crazy ones.
Yeah.
6 hours, sport eve. Holy cow. So how do I fuel for an all-out six-hour effort?
So if they're doing 6 hours all out, it's going to be that 90 grams an hour. It's going to be what the guys do in the, you know, pro peloton. It's going to be hitting those amounts.
Okay.
And that's not something you could just like just do on the day and think it's going to be all right, because it's not. You'll be the guy in the Portaloo, like having a terrible day out, you know.
Very, very true. I cannot. So we had our nutritionist Spencer do consultation calls with all of the people attending this camp, saying, yeah, "Hey, you're going to be going for big days out. You need to start gut training."
Yeah.
So what does the gut training process look like so that you can take on 90 grams of carbs an hour for 6 hours?
I mean, gut training, we do it with the guys here. It takes at least 4 weeks. And you can do it, I recommend, around 6 weeks before an event. And that's where you just do one, maybe two sessions a week, hitting the amounts you're going to hit in a race. And maybe in that first session, you don't even get close. You only can get up to 60 grams an hour. But then the next session, you do 70 or 80. One after that, you do 90. Maybe, you know, you do one where you push it a bit further than that and you go into the hundreds.
Getting crazy.
Get it? Yeah, exactly. We have guys on the team that do like 150 grams an hour.
I'm a big carb. I have to eat a lot of carbs personally.
Yeah.
A minimum 120.
Yeah, exactly. You know, and that makes a massive, there's some great research coming out about 120 grams an hour, about not only the performance benefit is similar between 90 and 120, but in terms of reductions in muscle inflammation and muscle soreness is significant at that 120 mark.
Interesting.
Yeah. But they need to do that gut training. They need to be prepared to actually do that. Take their own products that they've been practicing with. Don't change the products on the day.
Yeah, another bad idea.
Yeah, I recommend to a lot of my people as well that if you are doing a sport eve, check what the sports nutrition sponsor is of the event.
Okay.
You know, is it Morton? Is it whoever, Gatorade? Is it Lucozade? Something like this.
Right.
Because they'll be giving out those drinks free at the stops, right?
Oh, that's helpful.
Yeah. So then, you know, why don't you do a couple of sessions using their products? Just, you know, because if you're going to take them, then you know it's all right, rather than just like doing a Hail Mary and thinking, fuck, you know, have that and then you're in stitches.
I'll be good.
Yeah, exactly.
Everybody thinks that. They're like, yeah, Jason, no, but I'll be fine. It's me.
I think it's crazy, right? Like the amount of people that get a coach and train a year for a sportive, like the ETAP or the Maratona or something like this.
Yeah.
And then they haven't done anything nutrition wise.
Mind blowing.
Nothing. And then they wonder why they turn up and they're just like, yeah, throwing up and like whatever else.
Sick for a week after the race.
Yeah.
Well, what's the effect on the body? Like, so a lot of people say like, oh, my stomach always gets kind of messed up when I go really hard. Is there any reason, like physiologically, that might happen beyond maybe the nutrition?
Sure. So as intensity increases or exercise intensity increases, more blood is going to go to the muscles that are being used to facilitate the exercise because it's getting more demanding. You need to deliver more oxygen to be able to facilitate and energy. So if you have something in your stomach, there's going to be less blood going to the stomach to help transportation of that food through. So then if you are going super full gas, really high intensity, it's going to be harder to digest food. It just is.
Okay.
But once again, if you practice that, you will get better at it.
Very, very, very interesting. So sport tea sounds actually a little bit more, probably harder, but more straightforward to fuel than a 5 hour day that's kind of in the middle of a training block.
For sure. I think it's kind of easier in a way also because it's one day, you've trained for a long period of time for it. Afterwards, yeah, you go have a nice meal, you know, you're not worried too much about body composition, stuff like this, because you just had a massive day out and you've done the event. But like, if you're in the training leading up to that, you know, a lot of people, especially for like a big sportive with lots of climbing, are going to be wanting to drop weight. It requires a bit more control on a more consistent basis.
In that regard, we do have some people that, you know, definitely want to optimize body composition. Yeah. When we look at, you know, weight loss being a common one. What are some of your top strategies for a cyclist who's obviously concerned about performance, but wants to gain performance by optimizing body composition through weight loss?
Yeah. And in terms of how it affects their nutrition?
Yeah.
Yeah. So there's a few different kind of strategies you can follow. It does depend a little bit on the person. One of the ones I quite like to do is I quite like to employ stronger deficits on recovery days. So if you're doing nothing or maybe like a 1 hour easy cafe ride, give take half an hour, I'd like to incorporate a stronger deficit there. Because
what's a stronger deficit? How much?
I mean, moving more towards like 800 calories
as opposed to
what could be more like three to 500 calories on a normal day. Because calories work both on a daily sense, but also a weekly sense. And if you work out how many, you look at the training you've got, this is what I do for people, is I look at the training, I look at how many expenditure all through the week, mm-hmm. get a weekly total. I can then divide that weekly total between the rides and how much of a deficit I can give on certain days,
right.
and a stronger deficit on other days.
Mm-hmm.
And obviously, if we think about it like that, I can go, okay, well, I'm going to do a stronger deficit on these recovery days. That means I've actually technically got a bit more calories on my other days now.
Okay.
So you can fuel a bit more on those days that might be the harder 5 hour days.
So, or maybe some days where you have some intensity.
Yeah, exactly.
So if I'm on a calorie deficit, how do I structure my meals around my workouts if I still want to have good solid workouts?
So it's understanding that your sport is carbohydrate-based sport. It is glycolytic, which is that's what it means. You know, you are going to be burning more carbohydrate than anything else. So doing high fat, low carb, or having your fat trying to be higher still in general, it isn't probably the best direction, because you obviously have only a finite amount of calories.
Mm-hmm.
You're going to want to have your carbohydrates still supporting the performance you're doing. And you can do that by, you know, you having your turbo session or your training session, want to focus the carbohydrate both before, probably not during if it's only going to be a, you know, hour and a half, because you won't need it, you know, and then afterwards to support recovery. And that's going to be the bulk of where your carbohydrate is going to go.
So before and after your ride, get all your carbs in so you can perform and then recover.
Yeah, exactly.
Interesting.
And that could be obviously at different times of the day for certain people. If it's super early in the morning, you know, I gave that recommendation about some high GI carbs. You could easily just get a couple of pieces of toast, jam, glass of orange juice. It's going to go down super quick. Do the session, 1 hour, hour and a half, super hard turbo, smash that out, take on your protein afterwards. Could have some carbohydrate there, but you'll have all day then to actually have some carbohydrate before your next session, unless you're doing 2-a-days.
What's your take on bodies becoming more efficient at taking the carbohydrates and converting it to glycogen through practice?
Yeah, completely. The more we do exercise, the more accommodating and understanding the body gets, you know, to put in simple terms, the body is about moving a carbohydrate to the muscle. It understands that we're using this regularly. I need to store this in here, and it'll be more effective and efficient at it than if you're an untrained individual.
And what's your position on people who don't eat enough carbohydrates to fuel their workouts becoming more of a diesel engine as opposed to an F1 car, where they can't really meet those high peaks and really flip the switch and they can kind of just do one pace all day? How do you feel about that theory?
So your ability to oxidize fat and break down fat during exercise will definitely improve the more lower carbohydrate state training you do. And that's fine. They're going to be like the people that can go out and do a big day out and not worry too much. And that's kind of what I was saying to you earlier about some of the guys in the team. If they do that, they can do 5 hours at zone 1, 2, and it's not hard for them, but total calories is still important to chase after. But if someone's, you know, a big diesel, and I think varying and looking at the ultimate goal of what they're doing, if they're trying to train for a sportive or an event or a race, think about what you're doing in that race. Are you fueling high? Are you having loads of carbohydrate? Then you probably need to do a bit more high carbohydrate training, because a bit like builders is the analogy I like to use for this kind of like fat oxidation and carbohydrate oxidation, or the burn rates of those. The more low carb training and fat oxidation based training you do, you have builders that knock down fat walls, really good at that. You start hiring more builders to knock down those walls. And then the less carbohydrate training you do, the more carbohydrate builders you start to lay off, start to get rid of them, right? And then if you come to doing an event and it's all carbohydrate based, you haven't got that many builders anymore to deal with carbohydrate walls. So it's important to do a mixture of the both, because those builders are enzymes. I'm talking about enzymes here.
Yeah.
And you got to do a mixture of both of them if that's what you're going to do ultimately.
Fascinating. Absolutely fascinating. Will, our time is just about up, man. Thank you so much for taking the time out of your very busy schedule here to come and do this podcast.
My pleasure. Yeah.
Our listeners, I'm sure, will be very grateful for this one. And don't forget, if you're somebody out there who wants to start optimizing your training and start improving your performance on the bike, at Team EF Coaching, we would love to be a part of your journey. Head to teamefcoaching.com. And if you have any questions, go ahead and schedule a consultation. That's it for today. Will, thank you so much.
Thank you very much. It's been great.